Coming up, we have a non-Giannis, non-Chris Paul edition of the Kevin O'Connor podcast, focusing on a lot else going on around the NBA. Ryan Nemhard, Joel Embiid, what's going on there? Zach Edey, Reese Ache. We're covering a lot with slightly biased. That's coming up right now. All right, joining me today to talk more about the NBA, slightly biased. Slightly, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, as always. Love hopping on here to talk some hoops, because I think it's been a very interesting season so far, to say the least.
It has, and we're going to play another game, slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong, where I present you some takes from me, from some listeners, from some people on threads. I ask for questions over there with some takes they have about the NBA, and you're going to tell me if those are slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong. And I want to start off with you, because over this past week, all the focus has been on Giannis fake trades and Chris Paul. And over the past week, your Mavericks are 3-1. They've beaten the Nuggets, the Heat, and the Rockets. They lost to the Thunder like everybody else does. And I want to play you a clip to start us off here from you.
Oh, God.
Tonight, his 17th appearance.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is the next Steve Nash.
Maybe.
Ryan Nemhard is the next Steve Nash. Is that slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong?
Well, I'm just going to stick to the namesake here and say a little slightly biased, just because I don't know how similar the play styles are. But it has been really fun to watch Ryan Nemhard, obviously, a two-way guy the Mavs got this past offseason, rookie coming in, and was somebody that Mavs fans were all clamoring for before the start of the season, looked pretty good in preseason, got some very early season run. Like, he came off the bench, I think was one of the first guards off the bench in their opening night game against the Spurs, and just kind of fell out the rotation. I think defensively he was lagging a little bit behind, and D'Lo did kind of play well to start the year, and B-Will played well, Brandon Williams played well and sort of solidified their spots in the guard rotation. But Nemhard's come on, and man, he's been fantastic. You see some of the clips on the screen here. His feel of the offense is something the Mavs really don't have, especially without Kyrie Irving. D'Lo's not a half bad playmaker, not a half bad guy in pick and rolls. But Nemhard, especially for a rookie, and he's an older rookie to be fair, but he just has such good feel and command of the offense. And I don't think it's a coincidence. He gets inserted into the starting lineup the moment AD comes back. AD's playing the five. Those two have great chemistry. And the Mavericks have quietly been, over the past 2 weeks, a top 10 offensive team, which is kind of crazy considering the fact that they were dead last in offense prior to that stretch by a good margin. Like, they were comfortably the worst offense in the league. How sustainable is some of this? I don't know. He's shooting 56% from three or something absurd like that. But he's good and he's nasty. He's got a deep bag. And again, he's just so confident in control offensively and such a smart player that there will always be roles for guys like that in the league, I think.
I think it's slightly biased, but it's potentially spot on. Because Ryan Nemhard... I mean, maybe not Steve Nash, but Steve Nash for Dallas, right? Like a playmaking guard who can get buckets for you. Because look, the thing is this guy had an all-time great assist to turnover ratio in college. He, as a senior at Gonzaga, he became a knockdown shooter. That's carrying over. The playmaking has always been a thing for him. The scoring, that's where, like, I'm seeing what he's doing so far with Dallas this season, with the step backs, the mid-range pull-ups, the spot-up three-pointers. He's doing literally everything. Like, Nemhard is a post on screen that you made saying Ryan Nemhard is the greatest player of all time. I know there's probably a lot of people listening to this podcast. Some may be familiar with how high I was on Nemhard prior to the draft. I had him ranked in the 30s. I think it's a sin he went undrafted. I think he should have been arguably a first round pick. The guy is such a great playmaker. He had the 28 point really breakout game against Denver, followed that up with 15 points and 13 assists against Miami. And he played very, very well in that Houston game as well, with 11 points, 7 assists. The dude doesn't turn the ball over. He makes all the right plays. He's exactly what this Mavericks offense needs. He should have started the year, in my opinion, rather than Cooper Flagg at point guard. He works with AD. I think the dude, like, he deserves the full contract. Remove the two-way, make him the starter until Kyrie comes back, and then that's where, you know, he's gonna have to move to the bench and be a sixth man. But I think this Mavericks recent run, in part fueled by AD's return, as you mentioned, in part fueled by Nemhard moving into the starting lineup, it's interesting. I mean, the team does look a lot more competent than the last time, you know, we talked about Dallas when you came on the pod with me and Tom. And I mean, they feel like a team that is looking, you know, more like a play-in team. And I mean, as of now, slightly, they're only a half game back from the 10 spot. They're only five games back from the 7. This team is looking a lot more competitive. They are.
Yeah, I mean, and they lead the league in clutch games. They've always been a little bit more competitive than I think their record might indicate at 9-16. What's their ceiling? I don't know. Like you said, play-in team, right? And is that obviously with the trade you made in February, that's clearly a slap in the face to fans. But, you know, so there's two different sides going at it in Dallas Mavericks fandom where there's the, we need to tank, we need to trade AD, we need to recoup as many assets as possible and just build around Cooper. And then there's the side of, this team, when Kyrie comes back, who knows, make the playoffs, make the play-in, and whatever happens, happens. I'm sort of in the middle where it's just like, why the rush to trade anybody? I'd rather keep AD than trade him for Zach Collins and Vucevic, you know, and just kind of see how this thing plays out. And if you do find a trade for AD, great. You can do that and sort of you jumpstart your rebuilding process. If you end up being the 9th seed or the 8th seed and you get swept by the Thunder in the first round and Cooper gets this experience to play alongside AD and Kyrie for a year and gets in the playoffs, you know, what's so wrong with that? I mean, that's, to me, the number one priority for the Mavs this year is Cooper Flagg's development. And they already threw him into the fire with the point guard stuff you mentioned earlier, and it was a fiasco. But he's playing really good lately. So maybe you could look back at that and say, well, that helped them become a lot more comfortable in the league a lot sooner. And while it was ugly at first, maybe it helped him out in the long run. You know, that kid did do that with Giannis. So, this team is, they're interesting because they've always been a little bit better than their horrible start might have indicated. But they dug themselves such a deep hole. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it's still so early.
Is making the 8th seed worth it?
No, probably not, in my opinion. Right. I'd rather have the lottery odds. We just saw them move from 11 to 1 in June, right? So, like, I think I'd rather miss the playoffs and get those lottery odds, even if they're low odds. But to your point, like, Cooper's development is priority number 1, 2, and 3. Like, it's just right. that's what it's all about this year. And if that means winning some games and being, you know, competing in April for a playoff spot, whether it's a 6 seed or whether it's a play-in spot at number 9 or 10, I'd rather they miss out. But I think being competitive, even if they trade AD slightly, I think this team is still going to compete with Cooper and some of the other good quality players they have. It's not like they're going to trade away literally everybody on the team. And so I don't think the Mavericks are going to be a non-competitive doormat team. That's not going to happen at some point this year. In part, you know, Nemhard, you know, and moved in the line, making them feel more confident. In part, the potential return of Kyrie. I don't think this team is going to bottom out. Like, those teams at the bottom, you talk about, like, they dug a deep hole for the playoffs. Well, they also, you know, those teams have really dug themselves a deep hole when it comes to the lottery. I mean, you're not catching New Orleans with, you know, the Hawks have their pick, the Wizards, the Pacers, teams like that. And so I think for the Dallas Mavericks, I'd explore AD trades, but I'm not taking some silly trade that doesn't feel like a great return for him. I would not do that if I'm Dallas.
And that's the big sort of the conversation right now is, it's, do you just trade AD tomorrow for the first guy who shows up and says he wants him? Or do you just ride this out and maybe trade AD, or maybe you don't trade AD because you don't like his trade market enough and you re-explore it in the summer? You know, there's a lot of different ways they can go. I'll remind people, they don't have a GM still. So I don't think an AD trade is happening without formally naming a GM, would just be my guess. But, you never know with this franchise. You really never know.
How would you feel if Jason Kidd moved into the GM spot?
I just hate coaches being GMs. I just don't like
it. Well, if he gave up the coaching.
Oh, and just like a Brad Stevens thing?
A Brad Stevens style, yeah.
And Vogel is the next coach of the Mavs or something like that?
Maybe Sean Sweeney, who left for the Mavericks for the Spurs. Okay. How would you feel about that?
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I don't know how I feel about Kidd as a GM. I want Dennis Lindsay. That's who I think makes the most sense. That's a name that's kind of been hot in those circles. So he's currently the number two for the Pistons right now. But he was here for the Mavs for a year, was in Utah. He's got a pretty good track record.
Be interested to see what they do, because like you said, there's a lack of clarity right now, but Think about Kid in that spot. Let's move on to Threads. Alec over on Threads had a comment for us because the Lakers, 17-6 so far this season. They are tied for the third best record in the West. They have a +2 net rating, but that's 14th in the NBA. So LeBron goes 29-7-6 on Sunday. Clutch buckets, turn back the clock. But Alec on Threads says the Lakers are the most overrated team thus far. They should be 500, closer to their net rating. Is that slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong?
Most overrated team. So that's probably closer to spot on than anything else. Like, I'm not a firm believer in theirs. You know, there's some advanced stats and stuff if you want to dive into this with their net rating that, like you said, they should be closer to maybe like a 13-win team than a 17-win team. But they are winning games. I think it does kind of speak to what they have, where it's, yeah, on paper, this team, when you compare them to the other stacked Western Conference contenders, their defense isn't good. They have so many one-dimensional role guys, which is a problem that plagued a lot of Dallas Luka teams. Ayton's having a good year. I'm just still not buying into the Ayton experience in terms of I want to win a championship. But the thing is, though, they've got Luka Doncic. Austin Reeves is averaging 40 points a game when Luka doesn't play. And now you have LeBron back in the mix. Who really wants to see that for 7 games in a playoff series? That's where I'm like, yeah, their record right now probably inflates them. But in a playoff setting, when you have Luka, who's one of the best decision makers in the sport, drawing so many double teams, and then that's opening up so many great looks for Austin Reeves, who's been one of the most efficient scorers this year, and also a great decision maker playmaker. So he can make a playmaking decision off that. And now you add LeBron into that mix, who's one of the greatest decision makers in the history of the game. He's now playing in these advantageous 4-on-3 situations. They've got a disgusting offense. I don't think they match up very well against the top end contenders, truthfully, but you know, I'm looking at these title odds right now. Like, 4th to me seems high, but I don't know. I'd have those 3 Western Conference teams ahead of them for sure. And then after that, I'd hear arguments for them.
Yeah, I'd say this comment is fair in the sense that their net rating is way closer to average than their actual record is. But
that's crazy. I didn't know it was +2.
Yeah, exactly. It's 14th best in the NBA. And so, but I'd say slightly biased though in this case with the Lakers, because I do think this team is legitimately good. I think they have a shot anytime like you said, we saw Luka, you know, bring the Mavericks to the Western Conference Finals and an NBA Finals. And now he has Austin Reeves playing all NBA caliber basketball and LeBron James. We'll see. I mean, LeBron has went from looking toasted, you know, over the last week, and then on Sunday he looked more like himself. Maybe it just took him a little bit of while to get back into rhythm, game flow. That's always possible. And we see a lot more games like this from LeBron, like we saw on Sunday when he was absolutely sensational. And so that's always possible. Now, I do think they need another big. I think they need more wings. They need some more point of attack defense. You know, Marcus Smart getting healthy also would help. But what Smart is not his prime self anymore either. So they do need some things, but they need some things in comparison to the best in the West, Thunder, the Nuggets, maybe even the Rockets, if you want to put them on that level as well. I don't think they're quite on that level, but most overrated team in the league. I wouldn't go that far. Who else would be in that conversation, you think, as most overrated?
Yeah, that's the thing, is most overrated. I mean, like, by public perception, maybe the Cavs, who have just been a fiasco to start the season. Yes. Like, I think, I don't know if the sort of public opinion has caught up to how, I don't want to say dire because that seems strong, but how confusing the Cavs start to the season has been, maybe. So I'd maybe throw them into the mix. I don't know. I'm kind of looking around like all of these. I don't know what to make of some of these teams. Like, Toronto's been really good. And they're underrated. They're definitely not overrated. Would you say I'm a big believer in the Rockets, but I could see somebody saying the Rockets are maybe a tiny bit overrated.
I don't think so. I don't. I think the Rockets are legitimately good. I think they are. I think the Spurs, you know, some people would have said the Spurs were overrated entering the season, but then Wemby goes down and they keep winning games. Their core behind Wemby is starting to look really competent. There's not a lot of, like, quote unquote overrated teams, which is why saying Lakers are most overrated might actually be fair. I mean, it just might be fair. It might be spot on.
You want to know what opinion I have on this?
Yes.
My stance in the modern social media era, there is no such thing as overrated or underrated. Everything is overrated and underrated at the same time.
Does that mean there's Bill Simmons, everything's properly rated? Is that what it is? Yes. Everything's properly rated? It's a good thing.
You ask anyone and someone's underrated.
Yeah, somebody's always going to like what you say, and somebody's always going to dislike what you say. They're going to disagree, overread it, under it, whatever. Everything is out there. That's true.
That's right.
I think that's very fair. Speaking of, you know, overrated, underrated discussions, the Lakers did beat the Sixers last night. So there was a play in that game last night I want to look at from Lakers versus Sixers that happened in the fourth quarter involving Joel Embiid. He caught the ball behind the three-point line, attacked a closeout, and missed the layup. He missed the layup and he fell to the ground and he looked like he was flopping for a foul. But the big thing is he didn't dunk the ball, even though he beat Ayton off the dribble. Embiid has no dunks this season. No dunks. Jeez. And I've seen a lot of people saying last night after he had a 4-for-21 game against the Lakers that Joel Embiid is finished. Is that slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong?
Well, I mean, in terms of being a top five perennial MVP guy, absolutely spot on. He's just not that guy anymore. He just physically isn't there. And it is sad because he's this big dude who's had just these lingering foot problems literally his entire career. I actually think it's probably got in the upper percentile of his career, honestly, considering he came into the league, had foot problems immediately entering the league. The fact that we even got a 3 or 4 year peak from Joel Embiid, I think we should be lucky as basketball fans, really. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think as a top end superstar, yeah, for sure, those days are gone.
It's sad, man. I mean, it's really sad. Like, I don't feel like he's getting as much verticality. Like I said, no dunks on the year.
That's crazy
for him. He had like 75 just 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And when it comes to his defense, obviously he was once such a dominant force on that end of the floor. He just doesn't have the agility in small spaces, changing directions in the ways that he did it just a couple of years ago. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Embiid, you know, obviously not playing a lot of games, but still looked like a dominant guy. And for Philadelphia, man, like I just... You know, 13-10 on the year. There's a lot of good things happening. VJ Edgecombe looks like a great rookie with a lot of potential. Tyrese Maxey has taken a huge leap, not just offensively, but defensively as well. He had that unbelievable block at the end of the game on a Friday with the winning.
That's crazy.
Thursday night last week with that win against the Warriors, chasing down Melton on the break. That was like a great trademark moment for him with what's been a great defensive season, not just offensive season too. But like Embiid and Paul George, man, like it's bad, dude. It's really scary.
Dude, I mean, the Embiid extension hasn't even started.
Oh my God.
That one to me is just like, wow. I don't know what they were. That extension is just so puzzling that they went that route with him. But yeah, I mean, it does suck. And fortunately for them, they have Maxey, Dallas, Texas guy, of course. They've got Maxey, who looks like he's what? I mean, where would you even have him right now? Hovering in the top 10, like top 10 player in the league so far to start this season? Almost certainly an all-NBA guy so far.
Oh, yeah. If you're like just ranking purely off of this season, forgetting everything else in the past, Maxey's probably like top 10, top 12 for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's been fantastic, and I mean, we've seen it too in the playoff. Like, he's a guy that you can build around comfortably, right? Like, that's a guy you feel absolutely confident in leading your franchise
great
moving
guy
forward.
Too, like a great person, like not just a great player, but also like a good guy in the locker room. People like to be around him. That's important too.
That's just Garland, Texas. That's just what Garland churns out. Great guys, and then VJ. I mean, it's. The VJ had such a hot start to the season. And then, you know, obviously some of that shooting stuff was probably unsustainable. I think Nurse was just on some terrorist stuff with the minute distribution early in the season with VJ and Maxey playing 40 plus minutes every night. And that
he
finally
still
caught
is.
Up.
Like, it still is. And then the opposite way, McCain's playing like 12 minutes. Didn't even play the whole third quarter the other night. I just,
yeah,
like,
the
McCain
stuff's a little bit weird. So yeah, I think. If I had to guess, they're probably still bringing him back because he's been gone a whole year almost, right?
Yeah,
that'd be my guess. But they do have this weird with Paul George and stuff. Like, they have a lot of guys that want to play big minutes, but McCain definitely deserves it. By the VJ is going to be a stud. I mean, you don't have that athleticism combined with the skills that he does show from time to time and not turn into anything.
Well, you think Nick Nurse is just playing, you know, he's shortened Jared McCain's minutes because he's like, oh, he's not going to say anything. He's just going to go do his dances on TikToks and still smile and be all bubbly. Is that like he just knows McCain's not going to get unhappy?
Maybe. I mean, what is, he's been back, what, 14 games, really? Jeez.
Yeah, and the minutes haven't ramped up. It's, if anything, yeah. like they've dipped. He didn't even play the whole third quarter against the Lakers.
Yeah, that was really weird. The Lakers minute distribution. I know. I feel like Sixers fans are kind of iffy on Nurse, it seems like, from afar. But then yes. I wonder if Philadelphia sports fans in general are ever like even 50% okay with their head coaches.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's very warranted with Nurse. I like the guy a lot. As a coach, what he did in Toronto, I think there's a lot of, you know, he's shown a lot over the years, but I also don't totally feel like he has the finger on the pulse of this roster, this Sixers team. So very hard to say. Let's move on to another post on Threads. You could take all of the starters off of the Thunder and they would still make the play-in. That is from Zach because, on Sunday they had no Shea, no Caruso, no Dort, no Hartenstein, no Isaiah Joe. They were favored by 10.5 points over the Jazz. They still beat the Jazz by 30. And Zach had said you could take all their starters off and they still make the play-in. Is that slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong?
That's pretty hilarious, honestly. I'd say the play-in, See, they just have to be a 10 seed? Yes. I think I would still say so wrong, only because you do need a center. So in this scenario, like...
Jalen Williams? Take out J-Will.
J-Will. And what, you have A.J. Mitchell would be your lead ball handler.
Brendan Carlson? Carlson's not bad. Anytime he gets really minutes, he's not bad.
He really isn't bad. So you'd have J-Will. You'd have... And I absolutely love A.J. Mitchell. That's one of the dumbest contracts in the league.
Oh, my God, it is. Casey Wallace in 12 minutes. Actually.
Yeah.
I think it'd be Carlson, Williams,
started every game this year. But would you count Casey Wallace as a bench guy? Like when they're fully healthy? I'm assuming he probably still starts, right?
Maybe. Maybe he does. Maybe they keep that rolling. Yeah.
That's what's crazy about them is they have just been cycling guys in and out all year.
I know. The whole freaking year. The whole year. We haven't really seen Oklahoma City whole this year. They are 23-1, but they've missed J-Dub to start the year, Isaiah Hartenstein out now, other guys in and out. We have not seen a fully healthy Thunder roster yet, and they're 23-1. It just doesn't make any sense.
No. I mean, they're just so much better. So one of my takes right now is I think the Thunder have the keys to the trade deadline, not because I think they're going to do anything, but because I don't think it's impossible that teams look at their circumstances and say, do we want to trade that 2029 first round pick this year? Like realistically, like if maybe I'm just going to throw a name out there because the Heat are good, but it just is the first thing about my mind. If a Wiggins trade came to us and it's like, we need a wing. It's like, okay, do we want to trade our 2029 first for this Wiggins, for Wiggins if we don't think we can beat this Thunder team in the end? You get what I'm saying? So I wonder if teams, even like Giannis suitors, might look at their situation and be like, yeah, but will it be good enough to beat the Thunder? Because if we trade our whole future for 3 years of Giannis and the Thunder are just this team for the next, I don't know, 3 or 4 years? Because they're insane. I don't think a team's even close to them.
So not Denver, not Houston.
Denver, I'd say, is the closest, and they have like the recipe. If I'm thinking of what could beat this team, I would say you need size, but you need like functional size and guys who could take advantage of smaller players. So you got that with Jokic, and you've got that with Aaron Gordon, and you need guys like reliable ball handlers. You've got that with Jamal, and they've got role guys who can, you know, you got Tim Hardaway Jr. who could win you a playoff game by going 8 of 12 from three. Like I've seen it with the Mavs. You've got some of these other role guys who have been there before. They, to me, would be the one, but the Rockets, I think, are just still too green, even though they added KD. And even, it sounds stupid, Shane Goode didn't play in this game against the Mavs, and you could still kind of see there are moments throughout that game where it's like, they need a guard. They need, like, Aaron Holiday's been good, but they need, like, an actual guard still. I just don't know.
I think that's totally true. Denver's the closest. Houston, they still need some things to work out, but they're not going to, as of now, beat OKC in a playoff series. Like OKC would have to have.
Houston's great, by the way.
I agree. Houston's terrific. And I don't think there's anybody in the East that has a chance either, which brings us to our next one here regarding two teams. From Big Aaron Covington on Threads, he said, there are only two title contenders this season, Denver and OKC. Only two.
Yeah, I think this is spot on. And I would change it to only one. Truthfully, that's how I view the Thunder right now.
Wow.
But yeah,
only one. Maybe just a little wrong then. Just one.
Well, no, because I think if anyone were to beat them, it'd be Denver. And so because of that, I think I have to call Denver a title contender, right? In any other year, this Denver team's incredible, man. Like, they've been struggling a little bit as of late. It's hilarious how Aaron Gordon is just this... They've been struggling defensively, is what I mean to say. And Aaron Gordon is like, without him, they are just not a functional defense. I don't know how much of that is, well, it's December 8th. Like, we're maybe kind of going through the motions a little bit on some things defensively. But yeah, I just, Denver to me has the best chance. And then that by de facto makes them a contender, I guess. But man, I just don't know with OKC. They just do everything and they beat you in so many different ways. And Shea has just taken another step. He's 44% from three on five attempts a game.
I know. It was the one like nit you could pick was the three-pointer with him. And he solved it.
And, it's not catch and shoot threes.
Yes.
It's the step back threes late in game. Like it's absurd what he's doing. His numbers, he has like center efficiency. And we say that, and I don't mean like, you know, I mean like pick and roll lob threat center efficiency is what he's scoring with. It is absurd what they've done.
I know. It's really remarkable. And that's the thing with SGA.
I don't think people even fully appreciate it. Honestly.
No, they don't.
Do you see the clips of the refereeing and officiating, and that feels to dominate the conversation with him. I don't think people realize, because I think last year in the playoffs, they had that dominant regular season and they got taken to seven by the Nuggets, and then they got taken to seven by that ragtag Pacers team. And people were like, wait, I thought this team was supposed to be like this dominant force. So I think people underestimate them a little bit.
Oh, big time they do. Big time. And I think with SGA in part, like anytime he comes up, it's like you mentioned earlier with everything's overrated, everything's underrated. He's both overrated and underrated in some ways, but I'd say he's definitely more underrated because it's a lot more loud with the people who are like, oh, he's just a grifter. He flops too much. If you take away the fouls, he is still one of the most efficient isolation and pick and roll creators in the league. Still, take away the fouls. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I was looking at it last week when I did a thing on SGA with his scoring out of ISOs, but it's like, the dude has no holes. Like, there's really an argument to be made. Unguardable. And there's really an argument to be made when you consider what he also has as a playmaker and as a rebounder, as a guard, and as a defensive presence on a team that has no holes. No holes on defense. How often do superstar-level scorers like SGA take it easy on defense? And you get a pass. It's okay. Totally okay. But he doesn't. He's a grinder on the defensive end of the floor, just like every other guy out there. When you consider all of that from SGA and his leadership, all the intangibles, there is a real argument to be made that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the best player in the world. And I think there's a real chance that he really takes that title this year if OKC does win 74-plus games. And if they do go back-to-back, I think next summer, a lot of people are going to be saying SGA is the best player in the world above Jokic. That title will change. There's a real shot at that.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if this team does break the regular season win record and they're 70 plus wins. This guy's averaged 30 points a game for the last 4 years. So I've never really understood the whole, you know, when people are hesitant to throw him in those conversations a little bit. Like, he's been the best guard in the NBA this season. Jokic obviously is Jokic, Luka. I mean, Giannis, even when he was healthy, these guys are all some of the best players in the history of the game, and absolutely, we're seeing their peaks around the same time. Like, it's absolutely incredible as a basketball fan. But yeah, if the Thunder repeat, I don't know how you could make an argument other than Shai, because another thing that comes up with him is he's just so consistent. You know, it goes into him not having too many holes in his game, but it's just every night you know what you're getting. Rarely ever do you have the Shai game where, you know, guys miss shots every now and then. That happens, and even Shai will have a shooting game, maybe from the field, that's not great, but he always kind of bounces out with his free throws. But like, you never have a game where you're leaving it going, what was Shai doing tonight? You know, like, what were those shots in the fourth? What were those turnovers in the third quarter, that like 5 minute stretch where he had three turnovers? Like, he never has those nights. He's just so consistent. I think it bleeds through the rest of the team, honestly.
I think that's a big part of it. It's that intangible quality that he has, the consistency, his personality, who he is, and how it manifests for him on the floor, that everybody else follows the leader. And SGA is a big part of their success. Last year, winning the title, their growth year to year, going from a lottery team into a playoff team, into a team that was, you know, making some noise, and then, of course, winning the finals, and then potentially one of the greatest teams we've ever seen in sports history, potentially this season. And, of course, on top of all that slightly, they have the Clippers pick. OKC is the fourth best lottery odds this season because the Clippers are 6-18. The Clippers are only three games back from the play-in, the 10 spot, but they're 6.5 games back from the 8 seed. They're 9.5 games back from the 6 seed. There's this idea that the Clippers should compete, you know, try to, you know, get into the playoffs, even though it's not going to turn into anything. But I've been thinking, is there any logic to them just trading everybody away? Like, trade Zubats for the best offer, trade Kawhi to some desperate team, trade Harden, and build like this kind of scrappy Blazers sort of team, like defensive oriented for Ty Lue and all that. And, you know, they don't have all their picks until 2030, but compete. And I'm like often dubbed as the blow it up guy. I want to blow up teams. But there's a part of me that does really think the Clippers should blow it up. Is that slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong?
Spot on. I agree with you 100%. I think the Clippers should just, they shouldn't look at their seasons as this, well, we almost kind of owe it to the league to not blow it up because we owe all of these picks out to the Thunder and what could happen if they land a top three pick in a loaded draft. But they're not a team that's over for them. I don't understand how their window closed this fast because it was just, there were points even in last season where it was like, dude, this Clippers team could be a dark horse in the West. I picked them to beat the Nuggets in the first round. And I thought that they could go, I didn't think they'd beat the Thunder, but I thought that they'd be an interesting matchup for them. And all of a sudden, it's just, they are so old and slow that they just cannot hang in this league anymore. And it's crazy because I agree with this tweet you have on the screen. Harden is playing so well. And if you were to tell me that Harden was playing this well to start the year, there's no way I would have picked them to be even remotely this bad. I would have flipped their record. I would have had them 18-6 or something like that. And it's just, I think there are teams out there that could really benefit from a James Harden. So I do think he'd have a market that you should take advantage of for a 36-year-old. I definitely think, you know, I don't know if we're going to get to them, but the Celtics, I think about Zubats teams. I'm like, man, if the Celtics could swing a Zubats trade, like that could change the whole dynamic of the Eastern Conference, realistically. So if I'm them, I'm looking at the trade market. What sucks is they don't have like a young guy on their team where it's like, all right, and we're going to let, and you know, they've had some flashes from some of these guys, but we're going to let like Kobe Sanders kind of lead the pack the rest of the way. Like we're going to build it. That's not, it's complicated because they don't have their picks. They don't have a young guy. So I think because that you kind of feel this sense of you owe it to yourself to just ride this thing out. But man, it is sinking fast.
I know. And I get it. Like you said, it was just a year ago where like you could talk yourself into the Clippers making a run in the playoffs. It's just falling apart. You know, Kawhi has been like even pretty good offensively, but defensively he's not what he was, obviously. I mean, he's 34 years old. He's got a lot of miles on his legs, a lot of injuries behind him. Zubats has underwhelmed this year as well. Hasn't been quite what he was last year, but he's still a very good center, of course. And, you know, Brook Lopez looks done. Like, they're just so old off the bench. Batum is, he's just, like, these guys are all old. And I think it's a young league right now, and it's a fast league. It's a pace league. It's a, you know, spacing league. And this team is just, it just looks done. And never mind just the, you know, we're talking about OKC with SGA and their chemistry and, you know, the trickle down from SGA with how he is, as you said, slightly. And I think it's, you know, similar with the Clippers. There's just this cloud hanging over the team. They don't necessarily have a traditional leader. Kawhi's very quiet. Harden is a, you know, not the type of leader that I think a lot of people would like to have on the team. And the team is sort of falling apart with all of that happening. And so I think with the Clippers, even though they don't have their own first until 2030. Jeez. I do think that they should be exploring the market here for Kawhi, James Harden, Zubats with Eastern Conference teams. I'm sure especially teams in the East would feel like, yes, please, we'll take a shot at Kawhi. and maybe make a run. We'll take a shot at Zubats. We need a big. You mentioned the Celtics. Some of the, like, who would need Harden? Teams like that, that just give a first, and then suddenly the Clippers won't have their own picks until 2030, but they'd at least have a pick every year. And, you know, maybe you get a pick where it turns into the 10th best lottery odds. Like, it's possible. And I just think that's got to be, unfortunately, I think it's got to be the path moving forward for them, because I don't think there's any saving this season at all. And you don't owe it to anybody to prevent the Clippers the Thunder from having the best odds. And by the way, you could end up being more competitive with the guys you bring in, and therefore have a better record to close the year rather than the status quo. That's always possible, that they end up a more scrappy, tough, hard-playing team that just gets some easy wins in March and April to close the year. That is very possible. So I think blowing it up. Look at the Suns. Exactly. Look at the Suns. Yeah, look at the Blazers,
Yeah. I agree, because I would maybe have a different stance if I felt as though there was a pathway out. Like, oh, wait for this guy to come back, or, next year we'll have this. They're just so old. And I honestly don't even fully understand what's went wrong. Like, it's obviously because they're so old. And defensively, they don't move. They've got four guys who cannot move their feet. So that kind of is the crux of the issue. But it's just it's shocking to me that this went this bad this fast.
All right, real quick, just wanted to notify you guys that Yahoo is launching an NBA channel on YouTube at Yahoo NBA. That's where we're moving all of my podcast content, all of the Dunker Spot, all of the Big Number. We're going to have a lot on Yahoo NBA breakdown videos, daily updates as well. We're really, really excited about it. So be sure to go follow at Yahoo NBA on YouTube. That's going to be launching later in December. We'll be right back. You mentioned the Celtics. Let's move on to them, because we have two threads, one from Troy and one from Oso. Troy said he believes the Celtics will win 55 games and the Eastern Conference if Jason Tatum returns by March. And then Oso said, this one's for you, KOC, because he knows I've been very high on the Celtics. He said, the Celtics aren't actually good this year. Just to give some context for the listeners, the Celtics here are 15-9, third best record in the Eastern Conference currently, the 3 seed in the East, right behind the Knicks, ahead of the Raptors. So Troy believes in the Celtics. Oso does not believe in the Celtics. I do believe in the Celtics, by the way. Who's being slightly biased, spot on, and so wrong between me and Troy, and then Oso not believing?
I would say you're probably 55 plus games. I don't know, but I'd say you're probably closest. I think this team could win the East if Tatum comes back and is, maybe 80% of Jason Tatum. And I really want them to make a move for a backup big. If they were to go out there and swing a move, if they were to go out and get a Zubats, that's great. But Keita's been so good that, could they get a Daniel Gafford if the Mavs are trading away pieces and now Gaff's coming off the bench for them as a backup big? Because this was one of my biggest misses of the offseason. My number one underlock was the Celtics. Only because I thought they were they're a forward-thinking franchise, and they might look at this upcoming draft and be like, you know what, guys? We have the perfect excuse baked in to just tank. We'll get another pick, and we'll pair, AJ. Can you imagine pairing AJ DeBonso with Jaylen Brown and Tatum for the next 8 years? But yeah, I mean, they've been the best offense in the league over the last 2 or 3 weeks. Jaylen Brown's playing fantastic.
All Derek NBA White level. Had a really... NBA. Maybe yeah, he's even been first incredible. All NBA. He's been excellent.
He's been incredible. Shout out to Jaylen Brown. And Derek White had this slow start to the season, but he's been playing great lately. And then they just get these contributions. I mean, Joe Mazzulla is making a big-time Coach of the Year push. They're getting these contributions up and down. Keita's been a revelation. I mean, he is, by impact metrics, one of the most impactful players in the league. They're just a completely different team when he's off the court. And then you get, Hugo Gonzalez. His minutes kind of fluctuate. But you get Hugo, you get Jordan Walsh, who's been a man possessed lately. Josh Minot. You just get these guys who play absurdly hard. And they're just a nightmare team. They play hard. They shoot threes. They just have these athletes that are just nightmares for ball handlers, too. They're good.
They are legitimately good. I think they're a legitimately good team. Like every name you mentioned, right? All of them. And the one guy that like sort of doesn't fit in is Anfernee Simons. And that's the most tradable contract they have. He has $28 million this year, expiring deal. And if they can flip that with picks for a Zubats or a Nick Claxton from the Nets, a highly versatile defender from Brooklyn, and then you have Kata and Zubats or Claxton, that, like, to me, like, if they have that team going into Tatum's return in March-ish or so, like, that team on paper would probably be the best team in the Eastern Conference. I would pick them to go to the NBA Finals. And I think they are legitimately good today without Tatum. They're legitimately good today without that theoretical big they could trade for. And they're not a finals team, though, of course, without those guys. But if they get that, I mean, dude, like, it was a year, as you said, I wasn't sure if this team would be – I didn't think this team would be so bad that they'd have top odds in the East. I thought they'd be competitive, you know, play-in-ish, maybe compete for the sixth seed. But to be in the top four, they've exceeded my expectations, even my highest expectations for the team. Jaylen Brown has answered every question I possibly could have had about him as a number one with this opportunity. He has been so sensational, doing all the right things and consistent as well for Boston so far this year. They're a trade away and Tatum away from being right back deep in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, especially, you know, you mentioned Cleveland earlier. We talked about them on my pod last week with Tom Haverstroth. They have taken a big step back. The Hawks haven't taken the leap people anticipated. The Magic, they're good, but I don't think they're ready for that leap at all. The Raptors are fun, but they're not a finals team. The Knicks and the Pistons and the Celtics, I think, are really currently, as of today, and things can change, trades can happen, teams can dramatically overhaul how they look. But as of today, I do think those top three in the East should be the three most favored teams in the Eastern Conference. That is not reflected in the odds. The sports books still don't believe in Boston. They have them, I saw, like plus 5,000, plus 6,000. I think the Celtics are probably the best value bet of any team on the board in the Eastern Conference to represent the East.
Yeah, I think they're the best value bet for sure. I think I'd still probably pick the Knicks ultimately. But totally, you know, the fair. Magic are a team where they've had a really weird start to the year, but they've really picked up their play as of late. And I look at them and I see their starting five. Obviously, they kind of had their hot stretch without Paolo, but then Paolo comes back. But I see their starting five with, I mean, Suggs has just been so good at times this year. And Anthony Black has taken this big step up. But now, I mean, with this Franz injury, I don't know how you can... It's just wait and see. We, as of the time of recording this, we don't know what the Franz knee injury is just yet. It didn't seem... He was walking out with crutches. So maybe they avoided some big serious injury, but obviously without Franz, that team's not a serious contender because he's been incredible too. But
it kills me, man. I mean, two years in a row now where, like, if Paolo comes back, Franz is out, and like we just don't ever see these guys together. And it's just,
I know it sucks.
It just really sucks. Let's move on to a different team here. I want to talk about Zach Edey. Zach Edey has been on my mind a lot recently with the Memphis Grizzlies because with this guy, a lot of people talk about his offense. People know he's this dominant at-rim finisher, really good post player, but there's not a lot of conversation about his defense. So far this season, he's been absolutely dominant, stonewalling guys at the basket, deterring shots at the rim. Against the Blazers over the weekend, he had a couple plays just in the first stint in the first quarter where he closed out on the perimeter, altered shots at the rim, and this has been a thing with him all year long, whether it's in drop coverage, if he's getting beat, he's using his long wingspan to alter or block shots. As a help defender, he's been absolutely sensational as well, coming over, rotating over, altering and blocking shots at the rim. Second opportunities, like second jump blocks, he's been great as well. And then also on the perimeter, he's getting switched sometimes like bigs do. He had a great block against Donovan Mitchell earlier in the year on a step back 3-point attempt. And with Edey this year, the numbers with him, he's been dominant. He has 1.9 blocks per game on the surface. That's what people see. But teams are shooting 10% worse when he's a defender. Within 6 feet of the rim, they're shooting 25.8% worse on shots taken without 6 feet of the rim. Over 11 rebounds per game. The Grizzlies have a 94.5 defensive rating when he's on the floor compared to 118 when he's off the floor. Zach Edey, I had him ranked seventh in the 2024 draft, so maybe I'm a little bit biased here, but I think Zach Edey is the best player on the Grizzlies. Is that slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong?
I'd honestly go spot on. I mean, at the very worst, yes, he's, I think, the most impactful player. But this year, for sure, I mean, obviously, you can't make the Jaw argument. I don't know. Jaren Jackson's been playing a little bit better, I guess, but his start of the season was... Jaw was hiding Jaren's start to the season as well.
Oh, yeah.
And
Nobody was talking about Jaren because of Jaw, but Jaren Jackson, really rough to start the year. And also, even when he's on, he still rebounds like a little guard.
Yeah, I know. Jaren's just one of the more interesting players in the league because it's... He does have flashes. But no, Edey, I mean, we talk about like Steph Curry's sort of gravity in that how he draws guys out to the perimeter. Edey sort of has a similar thing as a big where it's just every team has to know where Edey is at any given moment on the floor because he's such a good pick and roll guy and he's so good at sealing guys under the basket that it feels like if he gets the ball on the block, if you don't send help early or if you're not shading him immediately, then it's just an automatic bucket. And yeah, he moves his feet so well. And it doesn't look like it because he's still so big that when you're watching it, it looks like he's still slow. But like you mentioned, he moves his feet well enough where he's always in position to recover, always in position to, you know, alter a shot or block a shot from behind. Yeah, he's been really good. And I just thought he was too big. Like I thought he was just too big and slow and that these guys always kind of get weeded out in the NBA. But man, he is a special player for sure.
I mean, I think that last thing you mentioned, that's where things are starting to change. So many teams using two bigs nowadays. And with Edey coming in, having the success that he's had, I do think you're going to see teams over time, and maybe even this year in the draft. There's this guy, Adai Mara, who spent 2 years at UCLA, really sucked. He was really bad. He's a Spanish center, and he really struggled there. And then he went to Michigan, transferred there as a junior, and he's been great so far this season. He's like 7'2". He's not the post player, the dominant post player that Edey was in college, but he's just freaking big. He's huge. And I think a guy like that, a team's going to look at them and say, oh, he could be our Edey. And so I think with Edey, you're going to see a market for some of these large bigs that just take up a ton of space. As long as, like to your point, like he's still going to be able to move, and Edey can move. And I think that's where like the criticism of him pre-draft was, oh, he can't survive in the NBA, he can't hang. But you saw that block against Mitchell on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. That's not the only time he's moved his feet successfully on the perimeter on a switch. And never mind in small spaces inside when he's holding opponents to 25.8% field goal percentage worse than their norm on shots taken within 6 feet of the rim. People, it's not to the level that it is with Wemby yet, but people are starting to, I think, avoid him around the basket considering how impactful that he's been when you watch Memphis. And so this dude was a dominant college player, one of the greatest college players of all time, and it's translating to the NBA very, very, very well so far for him entering year two. I just think it's very awesome to see Zach Edey continuing to be good because a lot of the time these great college players don't pan out, but you know, they just don't. And it's very cool to see things working out with Edey.
I always love whenever those college guys end up working out in the league. Like Jalen Brunson was a similar thing. Just great college player. And everyone's like, well, he's too small. And then he plays really well. And it's like, oh, well, he's been great his entire life. Yeah. I mean, the Grizzlies are one of those teams where if they draft a guy, you know, a guy like Edey, these college kids who are like have good production, have some questions. Cedric Coward. Yeah. I feel pretty good about their future and their outlook because the Grizzlies just seem to hit on these guys regularly. So
I can't wait to see what happens when Ja returns. Yeah, Jalen Wells as well. Because like they have all these young guys you're mentioning and things look good with those guys. They look more competent lately with playing through the youth and all that. Win or loss, though, there's like reason for optimism moving forward, which when Ja returns, we'll see. We'll see if he fits in.
Yeah, I mean, they're only 11 and 13 now.
Yeah,
like with the bad start, they're only two games below 500. I mean, they're...
For sure.
I hope Ja's good because he's the most... Maybe the most entertaining player in the league when he's on. Like, it's just his athleticism, his burst, the explosiveness. You never know what you're going to get when Jaws the basketball. And this start to the season was just sad. It was just sad as a basketball fan.
I hope Ja can get back to that, you know, top 15, top 20 player level. We'll see. And we'll be right back after this break. Uh, Also sticking with some topics from the 2024 NBA draft. I had Reese Hoshea ranked 11th in that draft. Of course, he goes first to the Atlanta Hawks. I was concerned about his jumper, concerned about his handle, his upside. So far this season, slightly, he's shooting 29.6% from three, 67.7% from the line. He's shooting only 26.1% on drives to the rim, down from 35.7% last year. Neither of those are good numbers. He barely runs pick and roll, picks up his dribble when he creates for himself a lot. This year, we've seen huge leaps from Alex Saar, Reed Shepard, Castle coming off a rookie of the year, still really good, Bouzelas, Khalil Ware, Keyshawn George, you know, we mentioned Edie, of course. McCain had a great start to last year. He's still a really good young player. There's Klingon. Tristan Da Silva's good. Jalen Tyson looks really good. T. John Salon and Ron Holland show flashes. That's 13 names Salon, that I mentioned. Man. Salon, big game on Friday. I'm not saying you take all of those guys ahead of Reese Hoshea. I would not say that. But I think you would take over half of them over Reese Hoshea in a redraft. And so, you know, like I said, I had Reese Hoshea ranked 11th, so maybe I am biased, but Zach Reese Hoshea looks like a bust. Am I being slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong when I say that?
That's a hilarious tweet.
I didn't even see this one. Just imagining you posted, just imagining the high odds of your favorite team winning lottery only for Zachary Reese Hoshea to be the pick months later. Sickening. Did you send that recently or is that during the draft?
No, that had to be around the draft.
Oh, wow.
So I clearly wasn't very high on Reese Hoshea either. But the reason why I'll say so wrong about Reese Hoshea being a bust is that draft was just so weird, man. You know, like, I think busts have to be within the context of the draft. That's why, like, even Anthony Bennett, huge bust, obviously. Just in terms of you draft the guy number one overall, and he's just not even an NBA player ever. But, like, that draft was so bizarre, and the best player was later in the draft. Reese Hoshea, he's still young. I'll give him some bail. He's this interesting case study where on-off numbers, I don't know if you see this or not, he's, like, on-off-wise, he's, like, top 10 in the league and on-off swing. You know, up there with like the Jokic's, like the MVP guys. But you watch them and that just does not
it really doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't.
And it's why it's the best argument for when you say, well, these stats can be really, really wonky. Like there's lineup stuff. Like there's so much that goes into these stats. But he's good in transition. He is good defensively.
Very good defensively. Very versatile. Long. He's been everything that Hawks fans could have hoped for. He got stronger this year, too. He's been better defensively, even better than he was last year. And so you got to give him credit there. I'm just worried about offense.
No, I agree with you. I mean, he's going to be a disappointing number one overall pick, regardless. And that's kind of what we thought, though, right? Like, wasn't that kind of the thing with him where, as well, his ceiling might not be as high as like a Saar?
Why take him number one then? If you take him feeling, oh, I'm probably going to be disappointed by this pick, then why is he taking number one?
I was thinking about this last night whenever I was looking at this. Am I misremembering this? Because Saar did not work out with the Hawks, correct?
Yeah, he didn't want to go there.
Wasn't it like Klingon the number one name? Klingon was the guy that they were kind of considering.
Yeah, there was like conversation about Klingon being like in talks with that first pick. That was floating around there leading up to the draft. I think there was a little bit of trade down talk as well with Atlanta, which is probably what they should have done. But I mean, they drafted, look, Reese Hoshea, the argument for him at the time, I had Gavoni on my pod at the time before the draft, and Gavoni, you know, made the argument for Reese Hoshea, and he's like, well, you know, he's got size and length and the shooting inconsistencies are real, but over time you're betting on someone with his character and his work ethic to figure things out, and it's only year two, and maybe Gavoni could end up 100% right about that. Maybe the Hawks could end up right about that, that Reese Hoshea becomes a knockdown shooter in time, and that, you know, 5 years from now Reese Hoshea looks like a great two-way player. Even if he's not the best pick from this 2024 draft class, it's very possible it could be a good player. And to your point, that's where I might end up being so wrong even thinking that he looks like a bust by number one pick standards. But, and I think that's totally fair.
By number one pick standards, I'll agree with you.
Yeah, by number one pick standards, but I think to your point about arguing about the weirdness of that draft class, that is a thing. And I like that argument because it makes me feel better about having Killian ranked number one. It was a COVID draft in 2020. Yeah. A lot of information. It's a COVID year. Teams weren't working out, interviewing as much, not as much information. That's a bad excuse. But it's really part of it.
How often do you draft a guy number one overall where it's like, we know this guy probably doesn't have the highest ceiling in this draft. Like, we know that almost certainly. But the floor is just safer.
Yeah. I think that was it. That was the logic. He fits with Trey. He fits with our existing core. He fits with what we hope Jalen Johnson could be and is becoming this year. So I think that was a part of it, is adding another versatile wing to the mix with Trey Young and with that team, adding Risa Shea there. But let's move on to another one here from Mark Haynes over on Threads. The Kings, they're 6-17 this year, minus 10 net rating. That's third worst in the NBA, ahead of only the Pelicans and the Wizards. Sabonis is out with a torn meniscus. Dennis Schroeder out with a hip injury. Keegan Murray, upper body injury. But on Threads, Mark Haynes says the Kings will turn things around. Is that slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong?
I'm going to go slightly biased. I mean, turn things around where? Like, turn things around, they're trading everybody at the deadline? Because that would be their best outcome. You know, I don't... This team that never made sense to me. I thought they were going to be terrible entering the season. The DeRozan thing always kind of made me sad, because it's like, if you're a Kings fan, obviously, a guy like DeMar DeRozan, picking your team is this super cool thing. And it's, oh, I watched DeMar and the Bulls, like... He's such a good player. Now he chose the Kings. How cool is that? Like, we rarely get free agents like that. But from the onset of that, it was just, that team makes zero sense with DeRozan. And then going, and it's funny because Russ has been arguably their best player at times this year. But even that didn't make much sense to me either. This team, did they know they need shooting? That was this whole thing. It was like, does this team know this is a 3-point shooting league? And at the very least, if you're not going to shoot threes, you have to do something that is just so much better than everybody else, whether it's defend, rebound, whatever. And they just don't do anything. They're just one of the most oddly built teams in the league. And, you know, I think there's some guys that could have some value, but the weirdest thing about them is, even if they decided to fire sell, I mean, what do you get? Like, what team is going to trade for Zach LaVine? We've done this song and dance with him for 5 years. You know, what team's going to want DeRozan? Like, what team's going to line up and give you like real stuff for DeRozan? Like, Keon Ellis is in and out the rotation, and he's a guy that always gets kind of brought up, but we're two coaches in now, and Keon Ellis is still in and out the rotation so much. It's one of the weirder things.
Yeah, it's very strange. I think the Keon Ellis thing, I mean, he would probably be the most, he'd have the most number of teams interested in him. Obviously, he wouldn't bring in the greatest return, but he'd have the most teams interested in him. And even Sabonis, if you were to put Sabonis on the table, coming off a torn meniscus, even if he were fully healthy, he's a strange fit. Do you want to trade for Sabonis midseason? Can you really fit him in as the type of big he is, with the iffy perimeter defensive guy, iffy guy defending at the rim? Offensively, he shot very well from three. Bad defender. And offensively, he shot the hell out of it from three last year. That didn't carry over this year before the injury. So, like, is he spacing the floor or not? Even then, he's a low volume guy. I don't know what I'm getting from him, especially with the injury on top of that. And so, even if they were to want to blow it up, as you said, I don't know what you're going to get for a lot of those guys. And also, your team stinks anyway. It's already one of the worst teams in basketball with them. And so maybe you're not gaining much. Maybe you just take it into the summer with the roster as is and, you know, do it then. But I'd say, Mark, with that comment, the Kings will turn it around. That is so wrong. It's just wrong. It's just not going to happen. And I think, if anything, it gets uglier with the Kings. Last one here from Silva. He said, everyone on the Warriors, except for Stephen Curry, should be available for trade. They had a weird weekend. They beat the Cavs and the Bulls back-to-back. Kuminga got a DNP. Moody demoted to the bench. Pat Spencer, maniac, you know, going crazy on the floor. Big games for him. And Quentin Post getting big minutes. The role players looked good. And so Silva said everybody should be available for trade except for Steph. Do you think that's slightly biased, spot on, or so wrong?
Well, I think this is spot on only because that's just kind of the GM MO I would have, where it's just, realistically, is there such thing as an untouchable? I always laugh anytime I see people who are like, well, the Pelicans can't trade Trey Murphy. It's like, why on earth could the Pelicans not trade Trey Murphy? Like, let's, like, what, why? But the Warriors, I think So the Warriors are just in this weird spot, and obviously their two timeline thing failed, and maybe they missed the opportunity they had, the real opportunity they had to really just say, all right, we have Steph for what, 4 or 5 more years? I'm talking this mindset a couple years ago. We have Steph for 4 or 5 more years. Let's really make the all-in push, and whatever happens in 2030 happens in 2030. Like, let's make a real effort to put a great team alongside Steph and not do the Kuminga, Podzimski, Wiseman at the time thing, the double timeline thing. Yeah, I mean, I still think that there's guys, and Jimmy, obviously they're not going to outright just trade Jimmy Butler, but in any of these, you know, Giannis trades, I've seen the AD trades, like Jimmy's contract fits those guys pretty much directly one for one. So that's where he would be in these trade mixes. But yeah, I agree. I'm spot on. I think everybody should be on the market, and that includes Draymond actually, but I doubt they would ever do it is the thing.
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be really the perfect trade to get right. Draymond. I think it would have to be a contract thing.
You're not like trading Draymond just to trade him. It'd be like, we're getting Giannis absolutely. And Draymond has to be in the trade for contracts.
Definitely. But if I'm trading for Giannis, I want to trade Jimmy Butler. I don't want to trade Draymond. Like, yeah, I still think they need Draymond, what he can do defensively. I mean, the games he 100%. Had against Wemby earlier this year, he showed what he's capable of doing when he's on in those big
absurd
moments.
How good so he I think is with Draymond,
oh, unbelievable. I mean, he was a guy people talked about 7 years ago, how he'd be most likely to decline. And because at the time, you know, before they won their championship in 2022, there was a moment where like Draymond looked like he was going to fall off. But he returned to an all defensive team level, still on any given night can be a defensive player of the year caliber guy. And so I don't think you can, you know, for all the good and bad things Draymond brings with some of the bad, I don't think you can trade him. I mean, he's part of their success for a decade now, and I think he still is. I would not want to trade him, but he's not untouchable, to your point. So yeah. I think that is spot on from Silva that, yes, everybody should be available. And also for Steve Kerr this weekend, kind of a odd weekend. I mean, like, he kind of said, screw it. Kuminga, you're out. Moody, less minutes for you. And like these guys, Pat Spencer getting heavier minutes, Quentin Post get playing pretty good defensively as well after, you know, not so good as a rookie. Looking more like he did at Boston College, I think it's been a big year, second year leap for Quentin Post. I think Kerr, with some of these younger guys, the players that he's giving minutes to, there's an argument for him now that's stronger to say, get rid of these other pieces. And let's get some new guys in and let me play some of these younger guys who play hard every night, consistent effort, and make good plays out there and play selfless. I think Kerr's got a pretty good argument after this weekend, what we've seen from some of these guys.
This has always kind of been the Warriors' MO, is that they have the system and the system is bigger than the sum of its parts. And like Kuminga, this whole thing has just been so bizarre. I cannot believe he's still on the team. It's clearly a match made in hell. And yeah, it's just, you watch Pat Spencer, Guy Santos, Quentin Post, about that. These guys just play so hard and with so much effort. And then you realize when you watch it, it's like, oh, that's just what the Warriors system asks. Just go out there and fly around the floor, defend, switch, get in passing lanes, you know, space the floor offensively, make timely cuts, make the extra pass. That's what's being asked. We don't want guys to slow down these possessions if your name's not Steph Curry. And even then, Steph doesn't hardly ever do that either. But we don't want guys to slow down these possessions that want, you know, contested fallaway jumpers. You know, it's not a fit with Kuminga. Like, that's just basically what I'm saying. And yeah, it doesn't surprise me that these energy guys come in. I feel like this happens to the Warriors like once a year, though. Well, they'll have a couple game stretches where these bench guys come in. It used to be like Damian Lee, Juan Toscano-Anderson. They'd have stretches where these guys would come in and be like, oh my gosh, does this guy get 30 minutes a game? But no, but Pat Spencer feels like kind of the real deal, though, in a weird way.
I know, he really does. It seems very real. It's just the energy defensively, the quick decisions offensively as kind of, as a secondary, or not even secondary, but just a guy keeping the ball moving within the flow of the offense, and the shooting from him. He's shooting 44% from three so far this season. Small sample, 12 of 27, but I mean, the dude works his ass off. He was the best lacrosse player in the world, decides to play basketball. And I think he's gotten better every year with the opportunities for the Warriors. Like, it looks legit to me. I think he should be a fixture in the rotation moving forward. He's definitely a better fit than Kuminga. That's for sure. Is he a better basketball player in a vacuum? Maybe not, but probably. I think he might be a better basketball player than Kuminga, which is crazy to say.
Yeah. No, I mean, Kuminga is one of the weirdest players in the league because, yeah, obviously there is talent and the size and the athleticism. That's all stuff you can't teach to anybody. Yeah. But then it's just, you know, what is the, is it just
how much put does him that on matter, a, though? How yeah, much does that matter? You know,
is it what put him on the Wizards and let him shoot 30 times a game? Like, is that the pathway for him? I don't really know. Like, to me, his size
sometimes
and athleticism.
Sometimes I think we value. Yes. Sorry, you continue.
No, I was just going to say the size and athleticism is like, man, you could have, like, this could have really worked if you made timely cuts and really bought in with, you could catch, you know, you could have 5-6 dunks a game. Like, you could have 10 or 12 points just off making timely cuts alone a game, and that'd be it. With this Warriors,
I mean, I think that's 100% the truth, and that's where, like, I feel like sometimes, like, we talk about the NBA slightly. It's like obviously these big dunks and highlight plays and all that and everything like that. But sometimes I think like we just undervalue what's going on between the ears and how guys read the floor and decisions they make. All the best players in the game, Jokic and Wemby, whether it's Ants or SGA and, you know, Stephen Curry and like Brunson, like all like the top 20-ish guys, Şengün and Booker, like Maxey, like all these guys have a mind for reading the floor and making quick decisions. And I think that's like the most important thing for becoming the best in the world, like the best players in basketball is what you can't see, but you can feel and experience when you watch these players. And that's the opposite with, you know, Kuminga, where it's like he just doesn't read the game that quick. And I think for the Warriors system, the nature of it, the way they play, he needs to be in a different type of team. As you said earlier, a match made in hell. It's not a fit. He needs to be somewhere else. But even then, I think in today's game, man, like that's valued not just in, you know, to become a star, but it's valued in these rotation pieces as well. And that's where with Kuminga, unfortunately, it just hasn't developed. I mean, it does for some guys. Some players develop better feel over time. Kuminga, unfortunately, just hasn't. And I look at him more like a contract filler than anything else. Yeah. I think if a team saw potential in him, like the Nets would have went after him. They had cap space to do it. I think one of these like sad, crappy, or desperate, or like curious teams would have said, "Oh, we'll go get Jonathan Kuminga this summer," but it didn't happen. Right. And I can't imagine the market is too significant for him out there, other than the what the hell are they doing, Sacramento Kings? Maybe the Kings would have interest. So he's a perfect King.
Well, that's funny because I actually think that could make sense. Well, not because like the Kings, what do you have for your young pieces? Reynaud, is that how you pronounce that? I always pronounce it.
Yeah, Maxime Reynaud, French center. Maxime Reynaud
has been playing. Reynaud's been playing pretty good, and you've got Nick Clifford. But these are like older. These are older rookies. So like I could see them, if they're doing a rebuild, being like, all right, well, I mean, we'll take Kuminga and see, you know, what's the harm in it, really.
I agree. It makes sense. He deserves to be in a team that puts the ball in his hands, like get the DeRozan touches and all that, and see what happens. And who knows? Maybe he becomes an all-ball presence over time, and he's right about himself. But for the Warriors,
he's a talented player. Their talent is there.
He's talented. He's talented. He's very athletic. He has, you know, amazing, you know, physical dimensions for his size. I just missing some pieces, unfortunately, for the Warriors. And hopefully he gets an opportunity somewhere else. Slightly, thank you so much for joining me today, man. This was a hell of a lot of fun to have you on again, man. You're in the Christmas spirit with your beautiful home.
That's right. My log cabin in downtown Dallas. Who do you have the cup?
Yeah, in the NBA Cup. I mean, it's going to be Oklahoma City, right? I mean, who else would you pick if it's not the Thunder?
The only way I don't think it would be is if they're just like, man, what are we doing? Like, we have to play an extra game, and you know, like,
I know, like, let's drop this game to the Suns.
But I think them being in it's great because I think other teams are going to be like, yeah, let's beat the Thunder. Like, let's do it.
I agree. I mean, in some ways, it is sort of a punishment to have to be in Vegas from Friday to Wednesday.
Yeah.
In the middle of December, it is sort of a punishment in some ways, which is why the NBA is going to change that to just the championship game in the future. But I think in the West, so on Tuesday, we have Orlando, Miami, Toronto, New York. And then on Wednesday, we have OKC, Phoenix, LA, Spurs. And then Wemby should be back. Wemby will be back this weekend. But I think ultimately, I'll take the Heat over the Magic, the Knicks over the Raptors, the two road teams, and then Thunder over Suns. Wemby coming back. Maybe it's a bit of a awkward transition.
So Wemby will be back for that cup game.
He's going to be back, supposedly.
Oh,
supposedly going to be back.
Hey, I did not know that.
So maybe Lakers over. I'll go Lakers over Spurs. No. Oh, I'm going to stick with Lakers over Spurs because it's tough to bring a guy back mid-year.
I don't think Luka's ever lost to the Spurs. It was either Luka's never lost to the Spurs or he's never lost to Wemby. I don't remember which one it was.
Yeah. So who do you got? Like, what do you think we're going to be seeing on Saturday with the semifinals?
I think Thunder Lakers is really fun. Like, that would be great. And yeah, but also at the same
but
time,
so I Spurs know, Thunder too. Though
I was just about to say, Spurs I honestly didn't know Wemby was coming back, so yeah, that would be fantastic too. I'll go Lakers Thunder, and I'll go Heat Raptors, only because I like the Knicks a lot. They're still my pick though in the East, but the Raptors kind of strike me as the cup team that's like, this would be so cool to win this. You know, like this would be sick. So I'll go them, and then I'll go Raptors and Thunder in the championship with the Raptors.
Love it.
With Thunder winning.
That's a
Thunder
perfect, winning, not the perfect, Raptors. Perfect. I love that NBA Cup matchup. That feels like what should be an NBA Cup.
Yeah, exactly. I like Toronto. These teams. It's like, you know.
Me too.
It's a fun group.
I agree. Even if Phoenix were to upset OKC on Wednesday and sneak in there, they're a fun, gritty, hard-working team. That'd be a lot of fun seeing them over the weekend in Las Vegas. So, yeah, I think OKC is this very safe bet to win it all. I think they're going to win the NBA Cup. They're going to win 74 or more games, and then they're going to win the NBA Finals, and they're going to be the first team in NBA history to win the NBA Triple Crown, winning the Cup, best regular season record, and the Finals. And then who knows how long it'll be before another team does that. I think that stuff like that is what over time will hopefully give the NBA Cup some importance and make people feel like, oh, it's been 8 years since a team did what OKC did. Does the Knicks have a chance to do that this year, or the Grizzlies, whatever team is good in 8 years? The Kings, maybe they have another good year. Could they do it? Could they?
Maybe they got Darren Peterson and they're peaking. Darren Peterson and Kuminga. Hey.
Yeah, Sabonis, is he still there with that? No, he's gone.
No, so Zach LaVine is still there, though, surprisingly.
And Maxime Reno, Nico Fucci, who knows? Kings in 8 years, you never know. You could always dream. Slightly, thank you so much for joining me today, man. This was a lot of fun. Always great to have you on. Always good having Slightly on the podcast. If you're still watching, I wanted to let you know that Yahoo Sports is moving my show, The Dunker Spot, in the big number to our NBA specific YouTube channel called at Yahoo NBA. So if you want to watch this show and all of our other great NBA podcasts, head over to at Yahoo NBA, hit that subscribe button there. We're going to have a lot of other stuff too. We're going to be doing NBA breakdown videos on the regular. We're going to be doing some daily updates as well. We got a lot planned for at Yahoo NBA. So be sure to go over there, subscribe if you want to continue watching the Kevin O'Connor Show, Dunker Spot, Big Number, and all of our upcoming NBA content. And whether you're watching or listening, just want to let you know, thank you so much for watching. Have a great rest of your day.